podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL.
Oh, hi there. Walsh here. Got a fireside chat lined up for you today with Dr. Bradley Rettler. He's a longtime pod listener, friend of the pod, Discorder. He is a philosophy and critical thinking professor at the University of Wyoming. He's published 14 papers on metaphysics, philosophy of religion, all sorts, and has a book coming out in a few months about philosophical case for Bitcoin. We will not be talking about Bitcoin, but that's just what's happening for Brad in his world. Brad, welcome to the pod. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Cool, man. So, you know, we're gonna weave FPL into this little bits and bobs when it's applicable, but, you know, kind of the overarching theme that we want to touch on is kind of just, right, how do we make decisions? How do we reason? What are problems that come up for us when we are trying to reason? And, you know, how do we think and think through things? So, you know, maybe you want to kick it off, Brad, by sort of just hitting some of the main points of that, like, how do we reason as human animals?
Yeah. So we'd like to think that when we are trying to come to conclusions about what to believe, that we are assessing the evidence and we have all the evidence and we're looking at it objectively and accurately measuring how much the evidence supports the thing that we are considering believing and how much evidence is on the other side. And then we dispassionately weigh it and we come to a decision. And that basically never happens because we believe too many things. We simply don't have the time to accurately do this. And so throughout our evolutionary history, we've learned to offload this reasoning process by taking a bunch of shortcuts. So, you know, if you're a caveman and you're near some bushes and the bushes rustle, you could like put on your reasoning hat and be like, wow, well, that could be a dangerous animal, or it could just be the wind, or, you know, think of all the possibilities and then decide what's most likely. Or you could just run. And the person who runs is far more likely to survive than the person who does all this reasoning. And so we developed these shortcuts for things that we do, and they were evolutionarily adaptive, and unfortunately, they often lead us astray. And so I think we're going to talk about a lot of the common ways that we get led astray.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not fight or flight, you know, are we going to die necessarily, right? We're sort of for this trying to evaluate which shortcuts are like helpful, right? So that we have more awareness there with picking Foden this year, because this is Foden's year, right?
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, when we start thinking about Foden, all that fight or flight stuff still kicks in.
Oh no,
it's a mess.
So you know, some specific problems you sent me this very comprehensive and cool outline with a lot of, you know, psychobabbly critical thinking terms, but, you know, what are some of those that, you know, you feel like really link most to, you know, when we're sitting there trying to figure out the 4-5 defender?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most common that we talk about a lot, we'll try to maybe talk about some that don't get brought up very often. You know, you hear like recency bias a lot.
Sure.
And confirmation bias. People probably have a pretty good idea of that. One of the things that we don't hear much about is evidence primacy effect. I think that's one of the more interesting ones. That's when we give information that we have received first more weight than information that we've received later. And the psychological studies that show this are really fascinating. You can watch videos of people, and in one video, they'll be doing something really mean, like punching an old lady. In a next video, they'll be doing something really nice, like, you know, handing a kid an ice cream cone or whatever. And then you ask, like, how nice is this person? And what we answer depends totally on what order we see the videos. Gotcha. If we see him punching an old lady first and then giving kid an ice cream, we're like, oh, that's a terrible person. That must be his nephew or something. And if we see them give the kid the ice cream first and then punch an old lady, we think, oh, that old lady must have done something to him. He seems like a nice guy.
Sure.
So the order that we get the exact same evidence matters as to what we think about it. It sort of restricts the range of how we interpret the person. And so I think this is super important for FPL.
So it's basically just giving appropriate weight to first impressions and not allowing that to oversize and overwhelm, you know, the first 20 games. Instead, you're really thinking or crystallizing the first three games you saw. And like, this is really who the player is versus, wait a minute, you know, games 4 to 6 are just as important as games 1 to 3.
Yeah, exactly. And it might even just be the first, you flip on the TV, you see match of the day and you see like an amazing shot from outside the box. And you think, oh man, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
And then you start, you know, seeing worse play later on. And you think to yourself, well, you know, the team must
you're not making be feeding excuses.
Him very well. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not fitting your narrative or what you want to believe based on that initial impression.
Yeah. Or you see a goalkeeper, you know, make an absolute howler, and then you see a couple of good saves after that, and you're like, ah, he must have gotten lucky with those.
Yeah.
Because I know he's terrible.
I know for a fact, beyond all reasonable doubt, he's terrible. Well, I mean, I guess something that's just coming up talking about this and has been on my mind, you know, preparing to talk to you is, you know, where I don't see the words emotion or feeling or anything here. So, I mean, that obviously those first impressions, you know, what we want to believe, whether we romanticize a player or they remind us of something else that makes us feel warm and cuddly. I mean, do you kind of espouse, you know, you need to try to pay attention to that, but when you're actually clicking the buttons and playing the game, that, you know, to make optimal decisions, like that needs to be removed to the best of your ability? Or is there room for that to like help the emotionality?
I don't think in the FPL context that it helps at all.
Not at all.
I think in some contexts, emotions are good guides to truth. But like if you feel warm fuzzies from like watching Foden play or Raz. Yeah.
So I have to take Raz out of my team right now, as you're telling me.
Raz is an interesting case, especially with this evidence primacy effect. Do you remember he was 4.5 when he was starting for Liverpool?
And
he was like, when this 4.5 guy, I love him.
Yeah.
And it's hard to let go of that feeling of love. And you start making excuses for why he's not getting picked. And you think, as you said in the last pod, that he has hat-trick potential, even though I can't remember the last time that he had hat-trick was. But
we don't have to talk about that part.
Because we love him.
Because we love him, exactly.
So, yes, this is a case in which emotions might lead us astray a little bit. We want Raz to be good. So this is motivated reasoning. We're motivated to find reasons that Raz would be a good pick, because then we can have him in our team and it'll seem reasonable. And we know that we're supposed to be reasonable. I think you might be better than most people at being like, I just like this guy. I'm picking him because I like him. But most people... I can people,
keep Raz.
Yeah, you can
permission
keep Raz.
To keep Raz?
Only you, though. Everyone else who actually thinks he's a good pick, they're not allowed to keep him.
Sorry, keep going.
He's not objectively a good pick at this point.
No, he's not. He's subjectively a good pick. And well, I guess that also, right, comes back to... what are our expectations, right? Why do you, not you, Brad, but like you specific human being listen to this podcast, play FPL? You know, if it is to get the best finish you want, then this is all the kind of shit that you should, in air quotes, should be following or being mindful of, right? Like that's kind of what we're saying.
Yeah, I'm presuming that your goal is to get the best score that you can. Yeah.
Yeah, which... as
some people
know,
play FPL for other reasons.
to be perverted for perversional purposes.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, so that's a good one, evidence. So just also taking that to the next step. So, I mean, I guess something that I think of is, you know, okay, so you watch first couple games, Ange is at Spurs, oh my God, Maddo's playing inside forward, blah, blah, blah. First three games happen and you're like, shit, Maddo's great. And then he goes on a cold spell for a few games. What are you kind of looking at to find out, is this that, you know, evidence first thing, what was the thing called? I already forgot.
Evidence primacy.
Yeah, evidence primacy, where it's like, no, this is really who he is. And, you know, these tweaks in the system, or like, you find reasons. Okay, he's playing wider. You know, when do you sort of, or what is sort of like the loudest information that you're really looking for when you're maybe being patient or making a twist, or
yeah,
I know, that's a big question, I guess. But
yeah, I think your goal is to look at all the evidence that you have, and to, if the evidence that you have underdetermines, doesn't settle what you ought to do, then you should, you know, search for more evidence. So you want to look at Ange, and you want to look at formations. You want to look at whether the team's playing the same in the last three games as they were the first three games, and how that compares. What you don't want to do is just pick one bit and say, look, Maddow played those first three games beautifully, so he must be a good pick. Team's just going through a dry spell right now. You also don't want to say, these last three games, Maddow's been terrible, so something must have happened. This isn't the same team that it was. Defenses have figured them out and just playing a different way or something like that. We don't want to discount the original evidence, but we also don't want to discount the new evidence. We want to match these up and try to tell an accurate story about what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm seeing the neglect of total evidence you sent over. When someone updates selectively on some new evidence, but not other bits of new evidence that are relevant. I mean, I guess that's something, it's one thing if you're picking Heinz ketchup or Hunt's ketchup, and, you know, you just taste them and you're like, I like this taste better. Cost is this, right, where you can really refine it. But I guess in FPL, like, part of the issue is, what is the evidence? You know, like, we have to even deciding that is a challenge, right? Like, which pieces is it XG? Is it this? Like, it's all small sample sizes, right? I mean, what do you do, you know, with your advanced degree in thinking? Like, what do you pay attention to in FPL?
Well, I mean, you know, I finish barely in the top 200K. So it's not, you know, I teach this, but I don't know how to do it.
No one does, I guess, but you're good. Yeah. You're good. Okay. You're good.
So I guess I try to, stepping back a minute, one of the problems with this is that when we introspect about our reasoning, it never seems bad to us. It always seems like we're doing it perfectly. We're totally objective.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not like we can think, wait a minute, am I subject to one of these cognitive errors that Brad was talking about? Oh, yes, I was. It was this one. It just doesn't seem to us like we ever engage in confirmation bias or motivated reasoning. It always seems like we're following the evidence. So I think trying to take a step back and think about the totality of the evidence that we have and recognize maybe the players that we love, we should maybe wait for a little bit more evidence before we decide to bring them in. You know, Martial gets put up top for United, scores a brace, and we're like, it's time. Bring him in. I love that guy. Great gloves.
Been there before.
And then, maybe we remember. So some people might have done that in the past and thought, oh, I'm not falling for that again. I've done that the last three times and it's never worked. So experiences where we've had emotional connections tend to come to mind more quickly when we're considering players than people that we don't. So, you know, I'm considering putting Pickford in my team. But I'm an Everton fan, and I've watched the Everton defense for several seasons. So I have a lot of positive feelings towards Pickford, and I have a lot of negative feelings towards the Everton defense in general. Sure. And so I'm trying to weigh this emotional connection that I have. And I remember, you know, brilliant saves that Pickford has made, and I remember terrible defensive play from every single one of the defenders. And so I have to think to myself, are these just coming to mind because I care and they're connected with something important to me? Or is this an indication of what the defense is actually going to be like this year and that clean sheets are unlikely to happen?
Yeah. And I mean, how much do you remember those saves he doesn't make because his arms are 1 foot long?
Yeah.
Who's to say?
It depends sometimes on the context.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. I mean, I kind of push back a little bit to that notion that, you know, when we introspect, that we sort of find that we're doing it right or doing a good job. I think that kind of depends more on the individual, don't you think? Because, I mean, being able to understand yourself and where you really, what your tendencies are, is how we change and evolve and, you know, right? So, I mean, like you're saying, you're going through this, you know, exercise of Pickford, you know, why Pickford? And you kind of look at, okay, well, I do have emotional attachment to him and the team. So, right, how is that? I mean, I think that's like high level ability of understanding what you're doing. I mean, you probably make the wrong choice at the end because we usually do, right, with this.
Definitely.
But I don't know. Is that a stretch?
Some people are definitely better at being aware of their own biases than others are. Okay. But in most cases, it's because they've worked on it. It doesn't come naturally to us. We like to think of ourselves as good reasoners and as not being subject to bias. And so facing the fact that we might be wrong, that we might be approaching things the wrong way, is uncomfortable. And we prefer not to do it. So we make excuses.
Yeah.
And we think, if I was doing something wrong, I would notice it.
Yeah. I mean, it's humility, really, right? I mean, being able to, like, for me, playing FPL, like, I'm bad at FPL. I know that. And I tell anybody that, and I believe that, and I'm confident in that, you know, versus me being ashamed of that. Like, oh my God, I have a fucking pod. I'm supposed to be an expert. Like, how can I be so shitty at this game? You know, it's like, whatever, right? It's a fucking FPL. So, I mean, you know, I think whenever we can kind of do that is, it helps us like sleep at night, right? And just have peace with what we do.
Yeah. And I think it helps us be aware that, you know, our decisions aren't always the right ones. Maybe in playing FPL, we sort of underrate how good we are at reasoning because there's so many people in the game and we have various targets of how many points to get. And we look at our team and we're like, oh God, no clean sheets this week. I suck at this game.
Yeah.
So it might go in the impossible, other
direction. Yeah, like the impossibility of the game is not really recognized firmly enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely in there, in and around there that, you know, people probably don't think enough about to really realize, like, what are we actually doing? We're competing against 10 million people. And yeah, so, all right. So another one you put on here, which I think is really relevant, is that sort of echo chambers, which, you know, you define as a feedback loop that occurs when our sources of information and opinion have all been selected to support our opinions and preferences, I guess, you know, what is might maybe predetermined there. So with FPL, I mean, how do you, you know, people, you're on this podcast, like, you know, you take in this piece of information, but, you know, how do we broaden ourselves so that we don't get stuck into that, you know, suddenly Raz is in your team listener who's listening to this?
Yeah, it's hard. Anyone who listens to multiple FPL podcasts might find this situation where they listen to one and they decide what transfer to make, and then they listen to another one and they decide on a different transfer, and then they listen to a third one and they decide it. And they're just sort of being pulled in whichever direction the people that they're listening to
recency bias
want to go. It's more like sort of offloading the authority for decision making to someone else.
Avoidance.
Like these guys have avoidance of responsibility, maybe.
Okay.
So then you might think, I want to make certain kinds of picks. I want to use certain kinds of things to make those picks. Maybe I want to use statistics, or maybe I want to use the eye test. And so I'm going to listen to podcasts or follow people on Twitter who approach the game the way that I do. Whether it's a particular team, so I'm going to make sure that I only follow FPL content creators who are United fans, or it's a method of decision-making. I'm only going to follow people who are using stats-based things. We don't get outside opinions, and we can become comfortable with, you know, this small group of people, and we think this is what everyone thinks. This is how everyone's approaching the game. And depending on for what reasons you picked the echo chamber that you're in, it might be that you're not getting relevant evidence because you've insulated yourself from it.
So how, I mean, I guess you could sort of theorize or argue that we are all in an echo chamber of sorts. But I mean, what do you do to break free of that to say, okay, I am evaluating a broad range of perspectives and opinions, you know, for FPL specifically?
Yeah. So one way is to not listen to anyone.
Okay.
If you're...
My ears are peaked now because that's what I did. That's what I decided to do years ago.
Yeah. So you're not on Twitter, right? You don't... What happens, at least what I've seen on Twitter in some seasons, and I'm not really on FPL Twitter as much, but you get one person's draft at the beginning of the, you know, as soon as the game launches. And then everything else is like a version of that. And people are just tweeting similar. I mean, you can't tweet exactly the same draft or it doesn't get attention, but it's just variations on this one theme. And nobody is, you know, outside of the mainstream picking Raz and Foden and, you know, all these other low ownership picks. So the conversation, when we talk about like the meta or the Twitter template or whatever, it's because these people are all talking to each other and they're all taking in evidence from each other. And at a certain point, you don't actually have to do any research yourself. You can just regurgitate the research of other people, which is much easier. And then you get even more echoes because there's nothing new being added at any point. It literally is just combining two things and putting it out. And then someone combines what you said with something else. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of effort to figure out who isn't doing that, who is like looking on their own, doing their own research to figure out whether it's stats-based or eye test, you know, who's watching video of Ange's team from last year and figuring out what the fullbacks did or, you know, who's the target on set pieces or something like that.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are valuable to follow. They're usually not FPL people. They're usually
They're footy people. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, I'm obviously on our Discord all the time. So I do consult and see opinions and talk to people every day, you know, about FPL or the game or whatever. So I am taking in that information, but this is unique to me, but I found back when I used to actually listen to other FPL pods, it would like confuse me as to who I am, like and what I believe, because like I'll be listening to someone I respect and they're talking about, you know, Sheffield United's like left flank is really susceptible. So, you know, they're playing Arsenal. So the right winger is going to fucking destroy and explode. And then I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, you know, I didn't know that. Obviously, I'm not like fucking tactically analyzing like the left flank of some shitty ass team in the Premier League. I don't know what, that's a different level of perversion, but it's not my kink. But I think about it over and over in my mind and I'm like, oh yeah, this has to be true. Like, this is the case. I'm not captaining the striker. I'm going to captain the right winger because yeah, like look at this, right? The left foot flank is whatever, they're set center backs or whatever. And then the striker scores a brace and the winger just like makes some passes and does nothing. And I kept finding myself in that sort of scenario repeatedly, right? Where I'm just like, what am I actually getting out of this? Because all I am really getting is more confusion. So yeah. I decided, right, just like, okay, I'm not going to listen to anything because then I also like wouldn't even be aware if I am taking something I heard and then reframing it or rephrasing it and saying it with Alon as though it's mine. And then I was like, I mean, I had to have done that before because it's human nature. But then I was thinking of that and like, that's fraudulent. Like, what am I doing? Like, I'm plagiarizing the pod and that's bad. You know, I mean, they're just like all these things were going through. So I just ejected. And I don't know, maybe that is avoidant. You know, maybe it's just like, it's too hard for me or it's too complicated of a problem for me to deal with. So I'm like, let me just like remove the hood of the, you know, plane and just fucking fly out on the parachute. But it's hard to curate, you know, the people you talk to and the information you input, right?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is, I didn't want to be one of the echoes. I wanted to be someone who was saying something new. And the only way for me to do that, given human nature and our tendency to repeat what we've heard, is for me not to do anything. And I feel like, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm a Patreon subscriber to exactly two podcasts. One is the Blue Room Everton podcast and one is this one, because I hear a lot of echoes in other places. And then I hear something that's right or wrong, not an echo when I listen to FML FPL. So yeah, I think it's a way of succeeding and not being part of the echo chamber. I also think in relation to the specific example you gave with Sheffield United, it sounds smart, right? It sounds like something an analyst would say. And then you're like, not everyone knows this. So I'm special because I know this. Whether or not I noticed it myself, I'm someone who sees something deep and interesting. Remember the year that everyone triple captain Dunk because they were like, he's got these two games and he's been getting so close on set pieces. And I didn't triple captain Dunk because that's stupid. But so many people were doing that. They were convincing themselves that it was the right thing to do. I have this like, underlying narrative where someone just made that up to see if it would, would do it. And then all of a sudden it became this widespread thing that in retrospect sounds incredibly dumb. But that happens, I think, all the time with triple captain and when to use bench boost and what to do with blank game weeks and all these kinds of things. It becomes everyone, you know, saying the same thing in order to try to sound smart about how they're approaching FPL.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, I mean, I captained Yannick Bolasie once upon a time, so triple captain him. So I don't have a leg to stand over here, but I wanted to ask you, I had a question about one of the other aspects of the outline is the deciding in advance about like kind of how to not make an error. And I just like super didn't understand this one. So could you maybe explain that and teach that to us?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple concepts to understand first. So deciding in advance is a strategy for counteracting these biases that we have. So one of the, I think, most important biases for FPL is a phenomenon called optional stopping. So optional stopping is when you are searching for evidence and then you stop, but you haven't decided in advance when you're going to stop. So the way I do it is like, okay, I want to bring in Raz. So I know I shouldn't just bring him in because I love him. I should have some good reasons. So I'm going to go look at his XG. Oh man, his XG is really fallen off a cliff, but XG doesn't tell the whole story. No, I'm going to go look for touches in the box. Yeah. Touches in the box isn't very good. I'm going to go look for goal involvements per 90. And maybe you look for 10, and finally you get to, you know, time spent in the box per 90 or something. You're like, God, he's like top five. That's the one that really matters.
Yeah, like so he's up there with Mbappe. Like, yes, okay. Exactly. Bye. Click, click, click.
So we haven't like decided in advance. Here's the metrics that I think are the important ones. And I'm going to look, and if you know, whoever is at the top of these, I'm going to take. Obviously, the most important metric is the ICT index. So we should just get whoever's at the top of the ICT index all the time. But we try, deep you know, cut. Listener we try to pot, play the game cut. Differently. So, you know, you see how low Raz is on ICT and you're like, that doesn't matter. But if Raz was number one in ICT, you would have stopped and you would have been like, well, there it is. Number one, I'm bringing him in. So we'll keep looking for evidence until we find evidence that supports what we want to believe, and then we stop. So
deciding in advance, so is that presupposing like I don't give a shit what the evidence is? I'm buying Raz and I click the button before it's doing
deciding,
it?
It's deciding in advance exactly where I'm going to look and for what evidence.
So you're deciding in advance the metric, not the decision. The decision in advance is XG is going to be my number one deciding factor. That's what I'm going to use to guide me. And then reverse engineer from there.
I'm not going to make excuses when I find a player that I love.
Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. We'll see how that goes. That's interesting. So,
and maybe it's the eye test. Like I'm going to watch the last Chelsea game that Raz started. And if he looks good to me in that game, then I'm going to buy him.
Forget that. It's going to be my feeling of watching him, you're saying.
Yeah, but even that, at least it's so that there's some subjectivity there. But what you don't want to do is say, okay, I'm going to watch the last game. And then you think, he looked terrible. I'm going to watch the game before that. You know what? Chelsea really haven't played him the way that Pochettino's probably going to play him. So I'm going to go back to that.
I'm going to watch the Southampton game from 2010. Exactly. He's going to be like Redmond or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
That's who he truly is.
Yeah, of course. He's truly this other player in this other time alternate universe. Well, I think it's an interesting concept because we're so conditioned, I think, in FPL to look at the player and make our decisions based on, okay, Bruno, okay, Saka, okay. But I mean, you can look at a stat or a few stats and forget the names of the players, like just delete that column and decide based on that. If you say you take their price, XG, minutes, or what, I mean, I guess that's what all those algorithm people do, more or less, right? It's an interesting way to approach it, right?
Yeah. And so I'm not necessarily suggesting that the best way is to figure out what stats you think are the most important and then just buy whoever, you know, fits the stats correctly. It's right. just to decide in advance how you want to make the decision before you know what that method is going to end up telling you to do.
Yeah.
If yeah, you know, if it has it that you're buying James Ward-Prowse or something, then you might be like, oh, I don't know about that method. So you go maybe back and forth between the player and the method, and maybe that tells you you need to tweak the method a little bit.
Right. I think something that's coming to mind for me now is that idea we've talked about in years past about like consistency of approach as FPL manager, right? Like you pick the explosive, high risk, high reward type players who, or you pick the ticker, like JWP players versus, you know, Sun or whatever, right? Players who can go on barren stretches, but can also spike. I mean, do you kind of, is that sort of what you're doing, deciding in advance by like, I pick the high risk reward players. That's my metric. And I'm going to do that as consistently as possible because over the long run, that'll even out and be okay. Or do you still need to sort of balance that? Or is that too narrow and simplistic or reductive?
No, I think there's many situations in which we have the opportunity to make these decisions. So we have the player specific ones, and then we have the, what's the best sort of overall way of approaching this game? And even within that, if you say the best overall way of approaching the game is to try to get the highest score, well, is buying the high risk, high reward players or buying the tickers going to give me the highest score? And I'm not sure that conversation is settled. What's a mistake is to decide, I think that the guys who tick over and are just reliable every week are the best guys to get. And then you watch a game and you see, you know, someone score a hat trick who's new to the league on a promoted team. And you're like, oh man, this guy's exciting. I'm going to get him. because then you're going against what you decided was the best method.
Yeah.
And you haven't decided, that isn't the best method after all. You're just ignoring your earlier decision because you got excited about someone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I suppose FPL and self-loathing are, you know, bedfellows, and if you allow them to be, right? But it is what you're talking about, right? We sit here, people that are listening to this podcast a month before fucking ball is kicked and, you know, perseverating over, you know, the Liverpool friendly that happened today, if like Darwin's back on the menu, right? It's really just about knowing why you're doing these things and just committing, right? Because there's nothing wrong with you getting excited for, you know, Nathan Tella on Burnley scoring a brace and against City in the first game week and buying him. As long as you don't bitch and moan and, you know, turn up like a little fucking whiny bitch about it, right?
Yeah. And another way of thinking about this is before you look at the result of the Liverpool friendly, before you look at the lineup or anything, think to yourself, what am I going to do depending on how this turns out? So if it turns out that Darwin is starting, what's that going to tell me? If it turns out that Darwin isn't starting, if I watch it and Darwin looks terrible, what will I do? Because if we don't decide in advance how we're going to react and we don't consider what the possible outcomes might be, we can tend to get taken along by, you know, oh, Darwin's in the starting lineup. He looked good. Great movement. I'm going to buy him. Whereas if we think about it objectively beforehand, we might think, you know, this is a first friendly against a terrible team. And I don't expect Gakpo to start because he's not ready. So it's not really going to tell me anything. So we should decide before we look at some of these early results, what we're going to do depending on what we might see.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a way of keeping your feet on the ground and not getting carried away with one or two voices who might be getting carried away. Right. I mean, we've done some like very inconsistently think about, okay, it's Champions League. Like what would have to happen for me to buy Mo or something, right? Minimum race. Like he has to fucking destroy them and look fit and blah, blah, blah. I always, though, I will see that, or I'll tell myself that, and then 20 minutes in, I'm like, oh, he missed a big chance. Like, oh, but he's getting big chances.
Exactly. So,
right? So what is that? I mean, is that fucking insane, or is that just inevitability of the emotional aspect or the humanness, or like... What, I mean, how do you explain this? Like, it's that's a madness.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to buy Mo, and so you throw out your original criteria because you're excited about Mo.
So is the thing to learn from there just to, like, it's hard to not personalize this because I can't speak for, you know, people at large, but like for me, it's like, is it sort of de-escalating my expectation, knowing myself in that way? Like, I could maybe hold myself to a higher standard when team sheets come out of like, okay, well, I thought he would start and this is what I want to see. But then once the actions happen and the 90 minutes is over, that's a completely different thing. Like, so is that like, how do you actually take that and move yourself forward?
The ideal thing to do is exactly what you did, minus the changing your mind in the end. So it's saying, if he gets a brace, then I'm going to buy it. If he doesn't get a brace, then I'm not. And then following through with it. It's also okay to say, look, if he doesn't seem like he's limping, I'm going to buy him because I love the guy. And if he's not injured, he's in my team.
Yeah,
that's fine.
He gets two assists. I'm like, I didn't specify a brace of goals. Like, that's fine.
So I think the only bad thing is to decide on what you think is the best evidence and then change your mind for no good reason afterwards.
Well, for emotion. That's the reason. To let your emotion... Yeah. That's interesting.
And emotion might be a good reason in some context, but I'm not sure it's a good reason.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't, you know, finding a romantic partner. I mean, this is picking faceless things on the screen, right?
Clicking. I mean, they might turn out to be your romantic partner, but it's unlikely. Hey, you know, it's unlikely.
You don't want to know what I think about when I got my hand, you know, okay. Anyway, okay. Yeah, okay.
If Salah takes off his shirt, I'm picking him.
Yeah. If Ozil comes out of retirement and gets into the Premier League, I'm picking him.
Oh, man.
So what else, you know, what other hits would you like to kind of touch on? I mean, there's so many to choose from here.
Yeah. So what about the idea that it's, I'll say the phenomenon first, and then I'll say how I think about it in FPL. So there's this idea of an endowment effect. When something is yours, you value it more highly than when it's not yours. So if you give people in a psychological study, if you hand them something and then you ask them, you know, how much can I pay to get that from you? They'll cite a much higher number than if you say, how much would you like to buy this for from me? So if they already own it, they think it's worth more than if they have to buy it from you. So I think this happens in FPL, right? We get these limited number of transfers. We spend a lot of time thinking about them. We make the decision. We bring the player in. And the last thing we want to do is transfer the player out the next week, unless they get injured. Because now they're ours. We've made the right decision. And so they just need some time to come good. And I think it's really interesting to think about the context in which it makes sense to transfer a player out that you've just brought in and when it doesn't. There's certainly something to the idea of not just allowing 1 week to, you know, sway your decision-making. On the other hand, there's also something to admitting that you might have been wrong and made a mistake and not getting too caught up in the fact that you made a mistake and then continuing to go with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was, you know, I referenced this on our pod, but I was in with my buddy, my Arsenal Australian friend, and we talked about soccer and FPL a lot. He hasn't played for a couple of years, but he had 1 year where he finished like 2K or something. And, you know, I was just asking him, like, how did he do that? And he said, like, in so many words, basically, like, he knew he didn't know a lot, you know, in the grand scheme of things, right? He's not like Sven Mislintat or something. Like, he's just watching games. But he said if a player went off it for 2 weeks, like, he would just transfer them out. And he was just like, I don't really know why or what, but like, that seemed to have worked that year. Like, 2 games, it's hot or cold finishing. Like, it is that what it felt like, it was that much of a knife edge in general. And like, he was just hopping on all the bandwagons, whoever's hot, whoever everyone's bringing in, you know, just see, you know. And sometimes that works for 2 months and sometimes it works for 4 games. sometimes it doesn't work for two. And then you're like, okay, like Almiron, you know, okay, he had 4 goals in 4 games, bring him in, 2 blanks, he's out, you know, or he goes, continues that on. I mean, how do you kind of receive that? Like, is that nuts or is that like somewhat reasonable? Or
it seems reasonable if you think that sort of 2 weeks is a good guide to how the player is going to do in the next week or the next 2 weeks. You might think, though, I'm not going to do that if it's a game against Man City or Arsenal. I would just think in the abstract, whatever you have decided on as what you think is the best method, then don't make excuses for the player who blanks 2 weeks in a row, but you really want to keep because you love them.
Yeah. And then I guess that goes back into sunk cost, right? Where you're thinking like back to what you were previously talking about of, you know, you own it, you think it's more expensive than the thing you're going to pay for, right? Just because you own it doesn't mean that it's inevitable that you made the right thing. I mean, we want to think we're right, right? That's what we're trying to accept. You know, we will make the wrong decision in this regard countless times in FPL. And I guess it's just the quicker we realize that, the quicker we kind of divorce ourselves from the bad outcomes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And sunk cost fallacy is interesting because I find, at least for myself, a player that I've brought in on wildcard, I'm much more willing to sell than a player that I actually spent a transfer on. I have limited stock of transfers. Yeah. So it's like, I brought in a bunch of guys. One of them didn't work out. I'm going to transfer him out. But if I like spent a transfer, I took someone out of my team to put this guy in, then I don't want to get rid of him because that would be to admit that I wasted this really scarce resource.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because I guess it is like the time spent on the individual versus, well, you can't spend the same amount of time on all 15 spots. So yeah, you're going to have a greater association with the individual transfer than the wild card.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I view the transfer as a more scarce resource that I spent than I do one of the 15 spots on one of my 2 wild cards.
Mm-hmm. What about hits? How do you see hits in general?
Man, I love taking hits because I feel like I'm getting ahead of the game. But objectively, I think it's a bad idea.
Bad idea.
For the most part, hits have gone poorly for me. I haven't made. I could have just made the transfer the next week. I don't really know how to think about a general hit strategy and then when to apply particular situations to that strategy.
Yeah.
All of my hits have been emotional. I just really want someone. And the only way I can do it is...
That's why they're called hits. It hits. So you want the hit. It's an emotional hit. It's not like... It's like a drug.
Yeah.
They're not called like extra decision like in the game for, you know, where you're like, should I make an extra decision this week? It's like, no, I'm fucking hit. Hit me, baby.
Oh, I'm going to start calling it extra decisions in my head and see if that changes things.
See how that goes. I mean, something I've been kind of playing around, I think, with the game and the evolution of just where the league is with hits is that there are just like more points in the game every year, right? Like the overall point total of the winner of FPL or like your total, that keeps going up and the hits stay the same, baby. So there has to be some tipping point where it's like, there are more goals in the league. We're better at picking players. I don't know what it is where like that 4 point, I mean, we might not have reached it yet, but that 4 point lack of update in the game of like, is this worth 4 points? Like, should we revisit this? Put it on the ICT index, you know, however Towers would do it. I'm sort of feeling like that might be changing or has been changing over the last year or two because, I mean, people are taking -8s, taking -12s in single game weeks and coming out +20 sometimes. I don't know. I don't know. That's just something that we've kind of touched on a little bit, but it's really hard to pin it on something.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting phenomenon that hits have become less bad I think part of the reason is that the distance between the top teams and the bottom teams have gotten so much greater that if you don't have Haaland or if you don't have Kane and Kane's playing Southampton or something, you might want to take a -12 this year.
Won't have that problem this year, thank God.
Not this year.
But -12, right? But how much of that is like, because even that, like that's how we've all been there. Everyone is talking about like, holy shit, how do you not have Kane and Captain him home Southampton? Like, that's in generally not a good like piece of information to put your stake on, right? I mean, then there's that element of like, when am I supposed to trust the process and stay the course versus react, I guess, right? Which is back to all of this shit that we're talking about.
Yeah. But there's again another situation in which I don't know the answer. Yeah. I just think that if you decide what I'm going to do this year is I'm going to rotate among these five players so that I can captain who's ever playing a bottom three team plus Nottingham Forest or something. And I'm going to do that no matter what. So Salah braces, I'm still going to take him out and get Bruno so that I can captain Bruno against Luton or something.
Yeah.
Even if then Salah does brace, you should follow through with that if you think that that's the best thing. What you shouldn't do is change your mind because of what happens in the moment.
Yeah. Like that is the impossibility because you're predetermining your actions based on that logic and reason. Logic and reason is wrong sometimes. Like this isn't a dead cert, right? We can like form matters. You know, players do go ice cold and they do, you know, the player in the tougher fixture who's playing better outperforms the player in the easier fixture who's playing worse on October 10th. You know, so I mean that to me is like how staunch and like rigorous and ruthless are you with like this is what I'm doing, I don't give a fuck, versus like I'm gonna be flexible. You know, I thought flexibility is good, right? You know, I'm gonna just be flexible with this, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can factor form into your logic and reasoning, and you can factor flexibility in. You can say, okay, I'm gonna take out Salah next week for Bruno. Unless
yes, we're Salah coming with scores a brace. You're speaking my language now. Or and any brace. It can be yellow cards or assists.
Yeah.
If he does two of anything. Yeah. Interesting. But, so it's trying to preempt that. Get ahead of it.
It seems to me like if you think that emotion leads you astray when playing FPL, then the more decisions you can make in advance before the emotions happen, the more likely you are to be able to follow the path that you've decided is the best path before the emotion kicks in.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, and this is sort of the time where that exists for us is like, you know, the few weeks before preseason games start and we get clouded with disasters again. And after the prices come out, where it's like, I mean, something you said that keeps resonating for me is like that first draft, like the first real team, when you sit down, you just make your team, like, what is it? You know, I mean, that's really what comes from you when you first see the prices, if you do that, right? I mean, some people don't. Some people solve their auto pick team, fine. But, you know, and then they consume all the things and they're processing it and then they put it on the screen. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do you do? What do you do in that? Do you make a team? Like, do you get the game out and you're like, oh, like click, 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 here's my team. And then you go eat a sandwich or?
I auto pick. And then I tell myself, I'm just going to leave this auto pick until 1 week before the season because it's dumb to set. So as soon as I get a team down on the screen and I click save, then that's my team. And those are my guys. And they're the best guys. Yeah, and I don't want any other guys. Every time I've done that, I end up going into the season with something very much like that first draft team that happened before any preseasons and before transfers and all that stuff. But tinkering is really fun.
That is.
And so I end up making a team. And what I have done this year, or what I'm going to do this year, is
own Pickford for 38 game weeks.
Next week, I'm going to make the cheapest team that I can and save that team. So just all the 4.0 and 4.5 guys, so that when I come back to it later, I don't feel like I have to keep any of those guys, and I can approach it with a fresh mind based on what I think the evidence is telling me. Rather than, I don't think that having picked a team in mid-July is good evidence that that's the best team when the season's actually starting.
Yeah,
but I count it as evidence somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's, I mean, you can, again, choose your own narrative here to believe or tell yourself whatever story. Like, is your initial instinct at the best time to versus like it's going to be 2 weeks before the season, like you're saying, where I can take more information and refine what my initial instinct was, maybe, and like that's the point where I'm going to pick my best, be my best self. My best FPL manager self is going to be at this time, so I'm going to do it then. And yeah, that's an interesting thing to consider and just think about, you know, as ourselves, like when we pick the team and how we get married to them and things like that.
Yeah, I think at that time is when we have the most evidence. Yeah. So if we're trying to go with the decision that has the most amount of evidence behind it, then that's the best time to do it. What I find when I go and look at my team 2 weeks before the season is, instead of thinking which are the best five guys to bring in my midfield, I'm thinking, should I swap out Rashford for, say, Eze, who's had a brilliant preseason? So I really should be approaching it as who deserves this midfield slot, but I'm already thinking that Rashford deserves it and I'm considering replacing him, when really at the beginning of the season, it's empty. And it's the same with the wild card, right? I wish that in a wild card, you could just like blank everyone for a long time and then approach it as new. I find it much harder when I'm wild carding to go through this mindset because, you know, you potentially lose so much team value if you get rid of someone that you end up wanting to bring back in. And so you have to keep them there. And there's no way to avoid this endowment effect.
Yeah. Well, I guess even just using the word deserve in that was interesting, right? We're not saying earned, you know, it's like we're basing our history with this, with Rashford as like, oh yeah, like oh, it's Rashford, you know, he gets, you know, he helps the poor. He's just got an extension. Like he was great. Like, it's good. He could earn it for 0% from the way preseason starts to the way preseason ends. Or you tell yourself, well, preseason doesn't matter. You know, it's not a data point. Not a data point. We just want fitness. That's it. You know, so then it comes back to, you know, how are you evaluating and all of that. I mean, this is just, we could be doing this for...
It's so interesting too, because decision theory tells us that if something is evidence for something else, then it not happening is evidence against the thing. So think about it this way. If at the end of preseason, Rashford's had a brilliant preseason, if you would say, that's good evidence that Rashford's going to do well this season, then Rashford having a bad preseason is evidence that he won't do well this season. But we tend to only do it one way. So this is sometimes called heads I win, tails we're even. So if it's a good thing, then yes, it's for us. If it's a bad thing, it didn't matter anyway.
Doesn't count. I mean, now it's like my three-year-old. Like when we do things, like, he wins or it doesn't matter.
Or the game is a tie. Right? It was stupid anyway. Why do we even do that? So if Rashford has a great preseason, that's good evidence. If Rashford has a bad preseason, then preseason doesn't matter.
Simple as that. All right, well, we're getting up against it with time. Do you have anything else, you know, that you want to kind of make sure that we get on to, or how are you feeling?
So we talked about one strategy for trying to counteract the bias, which is deciding in advance what you're going to consider as evidence and where you're going to look and things like that. Another is to, before you look for that evidence, to consider even after the evidence, consider how you would have acted if the evidence had gone the opposite way. So if you say, want to bring in Rashford and you're looking at XG and Rashford has a terrible XG, consider how you would have reacted if he'd had a good XG. If you would think, oh, that's really good for him, then you should think that having a bad XG is bad for him. Suppose you're trying to not buy someone. Like you really don't want to buy
Rashford,
Ollie Watkins. He want to buy Rashford.
He deserves it.
he's feeding the poor, man. They're kids. If it's Ollie Watkins and you don't want to buy him, but you're like, I should check him out. And he has a certain XG. You might think to yourself, what if he had a better one? What if he had a worse one? How would I react? To try to figure out how much you really care about this thing and how much you would change your mind if the evidence went a different direction. So sometimes these imaginative exercises of the evidence going in different ways can help you figure out what the actual evidence should mean to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting exercise for sure.
Or you can also think, suppose someone hates Rashford. How would they try to convince me that the evidence that I'm looking at is actually bad for Rashford? What reasoning process would they go through? Someone who loves Ollie Watkins, you know, what would Walsh tell me about this evidence that I'm getting about Watkins XG and stuff?
Yeah.
And that can help us, you know, think in ways that we wouldn't ordinarily think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just keeping an open mind, right? I mean, knowing where you're at, knowing why you play the game, and trying to figure out how you make your decisions, you know, so that we just feel the illusion that we're in control, even though it's a simulation.
Well, it's disappointing that that's what you're taking away at the end of all this. just spent an hour of my time.
Hey, the black in my soul is not getting scrubbed out in 1 hour, Brad. It takes longer than that.
But I think you're one of the more honest people about the reasoning process that you engage in. And I think you're pretty transparent about that on the podcast. And people aren't thinking that you're going back and checking all these stats and everything. You're like, I love this guy. FPL's more fun if he's in my team.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely play the game emotionally and I like that. And I'm going to continue that. But all of this is stimulating to me. So I love thinking about some new concepts and thinking about different approaches of how to process information and then ignore it all and, you know, get rest.
Get rest.
I have plenty of time. Dude, I have plenty of time to do all this. And then, you know, I'm back at Brad's Inn at the day of the deadline when I'm DMing Alon fucking nonstop, like, but Raz.
Yeah, I've objectively decided that I should not have Raz.
Yeah,
that's good. I'm glad I did that. Now I'm bringing in Raz.
Dude, I love talking to you. I mean, this was super enjoyable. I hope you had some amount of fun, as much fun as I did talking about it. And I hope you guys listening, you know, take little bits and bobs or pieces from this. Any last words?
No, I've said all my words.
All right, Dr. Rettler, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. I don't remember how you end this pod, Alon. You should check us out. Bibbidibbidibbidibs. See you next time.
Follow us on Twitter at FMLFPL.
There you go. We got you, dude. We're ready for my retirement. We just bring you in. All right, bud. Thanks a lot. Right. Take care.
Sure.
Sports Social Podcast Network.